This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And good evening and welcome to Dystopical. Fareen and I are both back in the country. Hi, Fareen.
Hello, darling.
So, again, you're listening to Dystopical. We're a debate and a reflection on what matters or what we think should matter to women in the queer community. On tonight's show, we are so lucky to be talking with the inspirational and multi-award-winning director and producer Shine Louise Houston about lesbian and queer porn. And if you don't know who she is yet, then you will by the end of the show.
Write to us anytime during the show. You can text us at 0427JOY949, Facebook us at Dystopical, DYSTOPICAL, or email us at dear.dystopical@gmail.com.
And welcome back to Dystopical. I'm really excited tonight because we are talking with Shine Louise Houston, who is the founder of Pink and White Productions, and she's basically the pioneer of authentic lesbian porn. Pink and White Productions, if you haven't heard of them before, makes adult films that expose the complexities of queer sexual desire and reflects today's blurred gender lines, more fluid sexualities, and the realities and intricacies of queer sex. Their first feature, The Crash Pad, which is the first of her films that I saw, won the 2005 Feminist Porn Award for the hottest dyke sex scene. Their subsequent releases are 2006's Super Freak, which won the 2007 Feminist Porn Award for best dyke scene. 2007's In Search of the Wild Kingdom, a mockumentary, which won the 2007 Feminist Porn Award for best trans sex scene. And in 2009, the nominated feature film Champion. They also operate a pornographic website entitled The Crash Pad Series that features video and photo updates of some of the performers and characters related to the DVD release of The Crash Pad. And a whole lot of other stuff is in the pipeline. Now, I recently recorded this interview with Shine, and I should point out that she's actually based in San Francisco. So we had a pretty horrible time difference and quite a lot of technical hitches across the oceans. So apologies if the sound is not all that it could be, but this woman is really worth listening to. So, Shine, can you tell me, when and how did you start Pink and White Productions, and what was your impetus for making queer porn in the first place?
Well, to give a little history, I was working at Good Vibrations. I had been there for about 5 years.
And what's Good Vibrations? Mm-hmm. What's Good Vibrations?
What is Good Vibrations? Good Vibrations is a woman-owned and then a worker-owned sex shop in San Francisco. It was one of the first kind of like sex positive sex boutiques, if you want to call it that, started up in the 70s. And you know, it's got a really good vibe. Ha ha ha. It's very sex positive, and you know, the salespeople there are trained to give you like a lot of information, in a way that's not embarrassing for everybody. And you know, we encourage like people to find what they like, and we don't push like, you know, certain stereotypes about sexuality, you know. And I don't know, I learned a lot working there in the five plus years that I was there, and I think that really shaped like my values as far as like sex positivity and, you know, inclusion, as far as like body types and different types of sexualities and stuff. Like, hey, this should also be in porn. And it was very interesting, like as I was there, when I would people would ask like, so what's good to watch, yada, 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 and I had my spiel. But, you know, when it came down to lesbian porn, I'm like, well, we've got these two titles that are, like, lesbian-made, lesbian porn, and everything else is, you know, pretty mainstream, kind of girl-on-girl
blondes
kind of stuff.
Boobs and...
Yeah. You know, I mean, like you know, I put this out there. It's just like, you know, that is somebody's sexual fantasy, and that's somebody's sexual, like, preference, and it works for those people. But I think there's a whole... group of people or market of people who are like, that's not my fantasy. That's not my, that's kind of not where my sexuality is, or my objects of desire. That's not what it looks like. Mm. So,
that is so true.
So it was interesting. So I kind of, you know, that was kind of the platform that I was working with when I started Pink and White. And part of the impetus was kind of like a, I don't know if you want to, I guess it's not quite a quarter-life crisis, not quite a midlife crisis, but, you know, I had a film degree, and I just had one of those moments of, like, I'm still working retail, and I'm 30, what am I doing? I mean, I really did, I liked my job, and, like, all that kind of good stuff, but I had, like, this really kind of odd existential moment, like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm still, like, anyway, you know, because, like, you know, I started... You know, I worked at Thrifty's, you know, when I was 15. You know, so, I mean, you know, like 15 years of retail. It's like, come on, let's do something else. So I figured I've got about 5.5 years of market research and a film degree. So why don't I start making porn? And it was kind of funny that, you know, it wasn't like I just decided, I was like, okay, I'm going to make porn. It was this whole, I went through this whole phase of my life where it's like, well, maybe I want to go back to grad school. Maybe I want to start doing custom furniture. Maybe, you know, maybe I want to go back and, you know, finally get certified, because I started getting certified for TIG welding before. So I was like, well, maybe I want to go back and get certified as a welder, and maybe I want to do construction. So I went through, like, all these things, like, what do I want to do, what do I want to do, and basically life presented all the green lights for porn. So I was like, okay, well, if this is where my life is taking me, and this is where all the open doors are, then I guess I'm going to go in this direction. And that's pretty much how it went. And then I met Tony Comstock. Tony Comstock put me in touch with Blowfish, who eventually became my first distributor, and now I'm distributing with Good Vibes. So it's kind of funny, a little circle happened right there.
Well, I'm glad that you decided to make porn and not custom furniture.
Awesome.
Are there any specific core values that you adhere to in the work that you make?
I think the first is in production. So try to make everybody feel very comfortable and at home when we shoot, you know, all the scenes are pretty much driven by the models and what they want to do. You know, I do a little bit more directing, like when we do the features, but pretty much when it has to do with the actual sex, it's really up to the models. So, so anything that you see, like, in my movies, like, I didn't tell people to do that. They were like, hey, we want to do this, and then we're going to do that. And I'm like, all right. And some people go nuts, and some people, you know, are pretty mellow. So it's kind of a, I don't even know a lot of times what type of performance I'm going to get. So it's, I feel like I leave a lot of space for people. As one of the people that I work with, Sean, she says, like, I have a laissez-faire style of directing. So I just kind of, like, you know, like, let it happen organically. And, you know, also one of the other things is, you know, just the way I manage a shoot, I try to, you know, like, get people in, we do it, and we get out. So, you know, how much you're making hourly with me actually kind of turns out to be, like, a pretty good wage.
Right.
Do you know?
I was dying to know how the sex scenes get made, like, whether it's, whether you talked it through beforehand or you know, do you rehearse? But, because surely you've got to work out where to put the camera.
Well, here's the thing, like, especially for Crash Pad, the next feature, I'm going to try a couple of new things, but if we're specifically just talking about a crash pad series, I direct the cameras more than anything that I direct the models. So we've developed a system of how we move the cameras. So we have like a basic visual language with the cameras that we use. And so instead of like having models do things again or blah, 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 you know, it's really dependent on camera movement. And then that helps me in the edit. And then, of course, there are little cutaway tricks that I use in post just in case, you know, things are kind of hard to match action. So really it's more of the direction is more of the system that we use than actually directing or rehearsing with models. So really we have a system where we can really just let people go. And then, you know, it's up to me to recreate that experience again within a visual medium.
That's got to be so much more comfortable for the people that are performing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Is there anything that you specifically look for in a performer? Like, are there similar aesthetics?
When I first started doing Crash Pad Series, I was the one who was, like, you know, doing all the model correspondence and all that kind of stuff. I could feel myself starting to be particular about, like, people that I would want to work with and not want to work with, and that's when I handed it over to somebody else.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm not putting my biases on this. So basically, I have somebody else who does the booking, and essentially, if you can commit to a date, you're in.
Right.
So it's not, so a lot of times when I come to shoot, it's a surprise. I have no idea who I'm working with. So it's a challenge for me to keep even my own, like, biases about, like, you know, keeping my own preferences out of the system.
That's, you know, so that's really so interesting. And that was one of the things that first struck me about the crash pad, the first one when I first saw it, was that how different everybody was.
Yeah.
In all the different scenes. I'd never really seen anything like it at that point. It was just not what I was expecting.
And welcome back to Dystopical. That was a little bit of Barry White for you. Can't get enough of your love, babe. And heading back right into the interview with Shine Louise Houston and Kat.
Now, you're talking about how you were getting particular. Is there a kind of porn that you personally prefer to watch? And is it the kind of work that you make?
Well, just to say now, I don't have any time to watch a lot of porn. But when I was working at Good Vibes and watching a lot of porn, I think my favorite porn was gay male porn. Because a lot of it was just, like, crazy extravagant, and I really liked the crazy extravagant and stylized, some of the really stylized titles. And I also liked, you know, some of the really, really campy titles. Like, for a while, you know, Mardi Gras Cowboy was my favorite. And then when The Hole came out, I was like, oh my God, that is so funny. So I really dug The Hole. And I think they did a really, really good job at parodying that movie. It was awesome. So a lot of, I think, you know, the most porn that I had watched would probably be, like, gay male porn.
It's interesting that you say that. I've had this conversation with many, many people, and there does seem to be a predilection for lesbians or queer women towards gay male porn.
Yeah.
It seemed like, well, until your work came along, it was pretty much the most interesting thing out there, unless you like to watch, you know, straight girls.
Which, yeah.
Don't particularly, but that's okay if people do.
That's totally fine. I mean, I also do have, like, a mainstream porn star crush, but on Chloe. Like, I pretty much watch anything with Chloe in it.
Right. I'll tell you.
And I met her at the Gold Club once, so I'm just, like, a total porn crush.
Oh. Now, this is a question that I've always wanted to ask. It's something that I think about a lot. Sort of politically speaking, I guess, is there a difference at all for you between what turns you on or what you think's hot and what you think's actually appropriate to portray on the screen.
Yeah, that's really kind of funny because I had this conversation with Sadie Lee a little while ago because she did another interview here, and poop, I can email you the link to that. Because there are some stories that, like, eventually I would like to put on screen, but I would like to treat them in a way that's, you know, as you say, like, a little bit more appropriate for the screen. Just because, you know, visual images are really powerful, you know, even more so than, say, like, the written word. You see it, you believe it. So, you know, because there are things that I would like to portray which are really, really edgy, and I want to keep them edgy and not, like, you know, put them in the context of, like, yes, this was totally consensual, because the hotness of it is the non-consensuality. So, you know,
that's what I was getting at,
Yeah, so there are some fantasies that are just, like, my favorite fantasies, but you know what? Not until I, like, really can construct a way of telling these stories that I think is appropriate for the audience. So I feel responsible to my audience for putting the story out there like that. Until I do that, I'm not gonna do it. Just because, like, you know, like, those fantasies are fine, but in a weird sort of way, I'm not ready to endorse them unless, like, I feel really comfortable in, like, how I've presented it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Because, something inside your head is,
right,
you know, kind of safe. And I guess you're right. Once you put it up there in visual form, it's like, it's real.
Right. In a sense.
In a sense, yeah.
But, you know, people are like, anyway, it could be. Anyway, yeah, I'm finding a solution for that. But I do feel, like, a great responsibility about, like, the type of images that I produce, and, you know, so, yeah, and I think that's a, you know, every time I edit stuff or every time I put stuff up there, you know, it's an interesting, like, balancing act between, like, okay, am I okay with this? Like, you know, even when I know the actress that I've been working with is, like, that's totally what they wanted to do and blah, 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 you know, I'm like, ooh, that pushed my button, but even that's why I love doing interviews, so people really see the mechanics behind that scene. So when people are talking about, like, oh yeah, I totally loved it when you spit on me, because, like, and sometimes in mainstream porn I'm really not into the spitting, but when you see the behind the scenes and they're talking about, like, the way spitting, like, turns them on, I'm like, wow, okay, that's something even new for me, you know. And I really have to check myself, like, ooh, that pushed my button, and why, and do I have to do something about that, or do I need to kind of, like, step back? So, I don't know.
How would you respond to people, and I'm sure you've been asked this before, but how would you respond to people that say that porn denigrates and exploits women?
Well, I think
there's a lot of those people.
I mean, okay. you know, I think this rhetoric began second wave feminism. You know, and, you know, that porn is violence and yada yada. And I think there was, like, some wrongful conflation between sex and violence and porn.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Andrea Dworkin. But I think, you know,
oh, really?
But I think, you know, if you want to call it third wave, or, you know, like, if people consider now we're in fourth wave, you know, I've kind of lost track. But if you're talking about, like, the movement that really followed what is coined as second wave feminism, and then, I mean, that's super, super generalizing. Yeah. Let's just say that's really, really generalizing, like, second wave feminism. And, you know, and talk about, like, everything that happened, you know, Annie Sprinkle, Susie Sexpert, and, like, all that stuff that started to come out in the 80s, and about, you know, it's like, this is all sex-negative bullshit, mostly because it's saying, essentially, your sexuality, everybody's sexuality, has to stay in this little tiny box. And it's kind of limiting people's freedom about how they want to express their sexuality, you know, and what they want to do with their bodies. Now, I'm not saying that there are aren't fucked up power dynamics in any industry. There certainly are, like, bad power dynamics within this industry, but there are also some really, really good interactions between models and companies and stuff. So to say that it's blanket exploitive, I think is fallacious. I think there's a right way to conduct your business and a right way. Well, I can't even say that because there's so many different ways. I think there's informed ways to create porn and informed ways to be a model within the industry. And then, you know, I think that applies to, like, how you even live in the world. There's informed ways to, like, live your life. And then, I mean, you know, anyway, blah, I'm totally digressing into other things. But I don't think it's exploitive. I also think that, you know, since there was such a lack of imagery of queer sexuality, that it was absolutely necessary to say, hey, that's not us. This is part of us. This is a slice of us, you know, which I think is more representative of the whole. And I hope...
Good answer.
Thanks. I hope that, you know, it seems like, you know, over the last, even just 5 years, more people are starting to come in and make images that are more representative of, like, the diversity of our community. You know, it's not just me and a couple of other people. Like, more people are kind of, more voices are coming in, which is great, because then we have a more rounded view of who we are. Yeah. We don't have other people saying, like, oh, this is what lesbians do, and this is what they blah, 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 blah. Instead of getting just pissed off on it, or pissed off about it, and then shutting it out and saying it doesn't exist or that's wrong and nobody ever should do it, but jumping into the game and, you know, subverting from the inside. So
thanks and welcome back to Dystopical. That was Shaggy with Hey Sexy Lady. Obviously, I'm having a lot of fun putting together the playlist for today. And right back to our interview with Shine Louise Houston.
How's the current market for queer porn?
It's kind of, this is my, in my opinion, I think it's kind of open territory, mm-hmm. open market. I think, I don't think anybody has really, really cracked it.
Yep.
I think it's almost there. It's ripe, you know, and I think we've been seeing, like, as far as, like, the numbers of my company and, like, you know, what Good Vibes has been doing and, like, other people are trying to get, like, being on the bandwagon of, like, queer and inclusive and stuff, says that there is a market. I don't know if it's been totally cracked yet, but the thing is, like, I think mainstream industry, you know, like, larger companies, more established companies are kind of, they want to jump on the bandwagon, but I think they're a little too set in their own ways, yep. to know how to market this and to how to co-opt it. I don't think they've totally figured out how to co-opt queer, which I think is very, very telling. So I think right now, I think we're, like, kind of almost like, it's like, you know, wide open territory. We're now defining what is this market, what is queer porn. We're defining it now. What is the market for queer porn? How is it distributed? Do you know what I mean? And also, it's just like, it's on the wave of, like, a huge change in technology. You know what I mean? So there's all these really interesting factors, you know, the change in social climate and change in technology, you know, change in accessibility about who can be able to produce and, you know, a change in expectations from our audience. You know, our audience is very, very savvy. Our audience is demanding higher quality stuff. So it's a really interesting time to be doing this stuff, and, you know, we're trying to stay on the forefront of the technology. We're about to do some expansion this year to kind of keep up with everything, so, you know, it's wild times.
What advice would you give to women who want to work in the field, either as performers or to actually produce and shoot porn?
I'm sorry, for producers or for people who actually want to model, or do both?
Both.
Both. I mean, for people who want to model, like, I, like, this is coming from the producer side. I'm like, if you want to do it, that's great. But, like, if I've seen emails where, like, it's people have made it very explicitly, like, they want to work with us, like, for the money. I'm like, I don't want to work with you if you just want to do it for the money.
Right.
You know, I feel like if you are going to do it, you want to do it for, like, you've really thought about it, you want to do it, you want to try it, that's great. I feel like those are the people that I feel, I personally feel the most comfortable, like, working with.
Yeah.
You know. You know, and if you're thinking about producing porn, that's great. Do it. you know, you know, something that I do harp on, even with myself, is that when you're dealing with this medium, you're dealing with a medium that has, you know, 100 years of history. Mm. It's a, this is a craft. So I'm, you know, even, I'm harsh on myself, on my craft. I'm like, believe it or not, anything that I do after I've done it, I'm like, fuck, that was crap.
really?
Seriously.
Wow.
You know, and like, you know, so I'm really interested in the new projects that I'm about to do because I'm like, great, now we can do things better. So, you know, something that I emphasize with people is like, learn your craft. At least learn the basics of your craft. This is a craft. What are the tools? What are the editing tools? What are, like, you know, I don't know. So I kind of harp on that. You know, if you want to do it, know your craft. Look at, I mean, look at the history of film and look at the history of, like, queers in film. Like, you know, not to say that you can't make porn without that knowledge, but that's just my little soapbox. and also, just like the other thing, like, before I jumped into this, I had no idea about, like, a lot of the legalities of things.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, and then just do the legal research to cover your ass. Because... you know, while a lot of society is very, very sex positive and all that kind of stuff, the majority of people are really kind of sex negative. And there's, you know, still some really ambiguous laws on the books. And you can see it this year with, you know, Max Hardcore and Evil Angel and, like, those two court cases, you know, where now Max Hardcore is in jail, but Mr. Stagnani is... you know, free, but, you know, it's, cover your ass, know what's legal and what's not. And, you know, just to be careful and know that that's a part of it. Like, it's all, like, happy and feel good, but there's, like, some really harsh realities about, like, making porn as well.
Yeah, I know, especially in Australia, you can't just make porn. You know, there are certain places where you can and most places where you can't, or you get into lots of trouble.
Yeah.
So before we go, can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on at the moment? That's really just for me, because I really want to know.
Well, so we're building some software that will hopefully keep us at, you know, keep us a big fish in a little pond.
It's intriguing. So, you're building some software.
We're building some software.
Right.
But we're also launching a couple of other projects. Like, I've started, like, kind of like a masculine appreciation site called Heavenly Spire. I'm also working on a project called Point of Contact, giving first-time producers, like, an opportunity to make their stuff. So essentially they shoot it and we help it along.
Wow.
And push it through our systems. So that's partly what the software is for. And then also we're going to start making small featurettes, like, for the web and stuff. So, like I was saying, like, higher quality shorts that are going to start coming around, like, maybe, hopefully, by the start producing by the end of this year.
So we'll be able to watch your work online.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, and that's the other thing. So, you know, I think we're going to flip our current model on its head. Instead of releasing first on DVD and then farming it out to a digital distribution that it's going to start in digital distribution. And then when we see things dip, it's going to go to DVD.
Right.
Yeah.
Is this the way of the future?
Yeah, it's the way of the future.
Right.
But, you know, also physical isn't dead. DVDs aren't totally dead. And if there is anybody out there who's interested in distributing our DVDs in Australia, you should definitely give me a call because we're looking into distribution for Australia. Hint, hint.
I'll put the word out.
So, if there's anybody out there.
I've got one more question for you.
Yeah.
And that is, would you ever make straight porn?
Hell yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I totally would. And that's kind of funny because that's with the featurettes, we're branching out to a lot of different things. So, yeah.
That's really interesting. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us today.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry about all the tech.
That's okay. We'll work it out.
Okay.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.